Talk given Wednesday afternoon, 23rd May 1973. This is a very happy moment for me. To see all of you here gathered together for our own little summer school. In the usual way, the speaker would be welcoming you. But I would like to put it this way. Let us all welcome each other. And let that welcome, starting now, be the prevailing mood and atmosphere until we go away from here, I trust, enriched, at peace, and nearer the heart of that reality, that religious truth of our being, which is our fundamental concern. So in that sense, let the welcoming take place. I'd like everyone to bear in mind that this is a Christian retreat house belonging to the Diocese of Portsmouth. But they throw open this house to other religious movements also. But it would be a profound courtesy to what this house has stood for and does stand for to observe a few simple points, which indeed do tie up very intimately with our meeting here for this week, for these 8 days. This is a school, a summer school. And it is a school for learning, not in the common or garden sense of acquiring knowledge or gathering information. Learning in the deep sense means growing through attentive living. Let us bear this fundamentally in mind, that there is a specific purpose, if you like to use that word, in order to fulfill or help to fulfill that which is within every one of us, the drive of transcendence which is embodied in our own being. We can let it come to fruition. We can hinder it. This is where our particular decision, judgment comes in. Shall we be willful as all the world is and go against it and lose our opportunity through the spirit of enjoyment merely? People go away from home desiring to combine business and pleasure, study and a good time, and so forth. Let the goodness of our time be the flawless goodness. The goodness which is not mine, which is not yours, but which is one of the shining characteristics of the eternal reality. So let that sort of spirit mark our learning. This will entail your own responsible work with yourselves and in relation to every one of us here throughout these 8 days. We meet here drawn by love, not the love that can be shattered, that can be hurt, that can be upset, that can take offense, feel annoyed, impatient, jealous, and so forth. But the love which is not just my or your emotional expression, but that everlasting creative energy which controls the whole universal process and moves it towards a fruiting of which our most exalted flights in imagination can never compass. So we meet in love, in the spirit of that sort of love, which is utterly pure, which is very natural, so natural that it has become, alas, alien to the lives of human beings throughout the world. But let that spirit of love just work through quietly, peacefully, always remembering that I, the person, can hinder it. And if I'm awake to that fact, then I, the person, do not hinder it, but allow it to work its own sweet will. And in that state of love, there is constant growth. Growth which you and I cannot and should not, very definitely should not, predetermine. That is to say, make a shape through our rather foolish, ignorant desiring of what it ought to be. So now, let the learning take place in that spirit of love. Don't ask me, what are we going to learn? Life itself will teach us if we let it. Each one of us has to learn what is just the right thing for us at the moment. I can't predetermine that at all for myself, least of all for anybody else. Life determines that. Life knows that. This is the meaning of life. There is an omniscience about it. There is a beneficence about it, which will bring into being that which is the perfect and the right, though I may not see it or feel it as such. Let it happen. You remember, time and again I have said, we must learn to live by letting live. This is very important. So, in this summer school, we learn in that way. This is our great opportunity. This particular situation, every single one of us who is here, our own selves, all these are our teachers, everyone. And in that spirit of awakenedness and of love, the love which is right beyond anything sensational or emotional, learning will take place, which means growing towards your own fruition by the process of living. Now in this, especially in the religious context, silence plays an immense role, the most powerful role, in fact. The meaning of this silence should be understood. It means, in actual fact, non-interference by me with what is actually happening completely in the immediate now. In the universal process, sound there is bound to be. That sound may be pleasant to the ears, or it may be jarring. Then we call it a noise. But our conditioning from childhood has been such that we associate the presence of sound with the absence of silence. This is a mistake. It is true in the limited context of physical events. If people have gathered together, say there is a dinner party, and everybody is shouting at the top of his voice in order to be heard above all the others, that is a noise, obviously. That's the dictionary meaning of the word. But in the religious context, the meaning of sound, of noise, is just this. When, instead of my paying full attention to what actually is present, which may include, of necessity, my saying something, or the other person saying something, and so forth, it may include that. If, instead of attending completely to it and doing exactly what is needful, my mind is constantly chattering back at what is going on, then I am making a noise and disturbing the silence. Now you see, when we look at silence this way, we will see its essential sanity, won't we? Otherwise, merely to shut your mouth, merely to go creeping on tiptoe all over the place, is to behave in a slightly absurd fashion. Therefore, let us bear in mind this essentially sensible meaning of silence. You will remember, often I have said, one of the basic rules of the religious life don't take leave of good sense. And in being silent, let us not take leave of good sense. But do let us recognize that we human beings, as we are in our modern world, in our particular cultural, social situation, certainly do make a sad lot of noise by chatter and in other ways. Now, in these retreat houses, usually they observe, some of the groups observe a total silence. It is a retreat in the full sense, the extreme sense of the term. Now, I'm not suggesting that we do that. Of course, let there be conversation. In fact, there must be conversation. But remember the meaning of conversation. Conversation. How does one person talk to another usually? It's just a monologue. Or perhaps it's two monologues going on simultaneously. Isn't that the case? Now, if it is a monologue, the one person is obviously imposing upon the other, imposing his ego, his lack of self-control, his lack of considerateness upon the other. The other has to endure this monologue. If both are doing the same things, then it is like, what shall I say, two cocks in the farmyard at each other. It's an absurd situation, isn't it? And what does it imply? And this is where the worst aspect comes in, the aspect of true noise. They are both mentally, as far as their attention goes, and physically, with their voices, talking back at each other all the time. This is not a conversation. A conversation is a communion, in actuality. If you and I care for each other, then when you say something, I try to give my total attention to it in order to understand fully, without my mind chattering back, and certainly with my tongue not wagging at the same time. Then I say something to you in response, not as a reaction to what you have said. And we say it in quietitude, out of consideration, out of affection. And there is beauty, there is harmony in that conversation. Remember what the Buddha taught about this, that when you speak, say what you have to say in the fewest words, rightly chosen, gently spoken. This is what he said. And of course, in his case, he said, let all talk be upon religion. All other talk is idle chatter. And if you look at his list of idle chatter, you will find that practically most of the talking in the world would just vanish. If it did, maybe that those who have exceptionally sensitive receiving sets on other planets would suddenly miss a din. Now, I have said rather a lot about this particular matter, because this particular matter is very important. Conversation, talking, occupies practically the largest amount of time and uses up the greatest amount of energy during the waking day of the millions of the world. Consider carefully, isn't that so? Whether it be in the home or the office or wherever it is. Talk, talk, talk. And especially at meal times, there is great wisdom in observing quietude. I was here, I had to take a group here on Buddhist meditation 2 years ago. In fact, actually, at this weekend, it will be exactly 2 years to the date. And that group observed the rule of absolute silence during meal times, which was a little bit awkward sometimes, because somebody had to pass the salt, and if he wasn't looking in your direction, some absurd little nudges went around the dinner table. Well, there's no need to go to that sort of extreme. Say what is necessary and let be. Now think of the very great advantage there. You can pay attention to the fact that you're eating a meal. Now you look at the Buddha's discourses about this. See what he says. How he does observe very carefully the taste of the food, what it was, etc., etc. He observes all those details. And this is a very interesting point. After the meal is over, he never fails to give thanks. And it may be that before beginning the meal, in silence, he gave thanks. You will find this in the discourses. You look at the middle-length discourses. The element of grace, of graciousness. Hasn't this world lost too much of it? And how can we reintroduce this element of grace, of human dignity, into our lives, except in the little ways which in their sum total add up to the thing which we call our life? The little thing done a million times has now assumed large proportions, has become a great power. And we will find that if we observe these little things in this way, our state of unease, our nervous tensions and upsets inside our own being, even our physical illnesses and tensions and so forth, may be restored to the state of ease, which is elasticity, which is health, which is well-being. Let us not think that these are trivial things. The whole universe is involved with the trivial, what we tend to call the trivial. If you were to take such a tiny thing as a grain of sand, or go even further, take a single atom, the entire universe is involved in bringing that atom into being. Think of it. So now, let us try and utilize this opportunity profitably. I'm using the word profitably in the same sense in which, at least I trust it is the same sense in which the Buddha himself used the word profitably. Conducive in the religious context, which is the truly human and transcendent context, for coming to fruition as men and women. Now, as regards our actual program, our meetings, as you may remember from the application form paper which you had, were suggested for 10 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I think, if you are agreeable, it'll be wiser if we started not later than 9:45. Breakfast at 8:30, and then at 9:45 we start our meeting, because that will give us a nice comfortable time between the start of the meeting and coffee time, which will be between about 11 and 11:05. It will be served here in this room, I believe. Or we may have to go there. After coffee, we will continue our meeting till about 11:45 maybe. I think 2 hours is, including coffee, is a reasonable limit. Then after lunch, you have your time entirely to yourself. 4 o'clock tea is served, and the afternoon meeting will go on till about 6. Now, tomorrow, the 24th, then the 25th, and the 26th, there will be a talk at the first meeting. In the afternoon, tomorrow, I suggest we have questions and meditation. It's good to have just a few questions which we might, you could ask, and we might discuss together. And because we shall be doing that immediately after tea, and after a while, the body should be in a fit state to practice some meditation. Then on the 25th, that will be on Friday in the afternoon, it will be questions and discussion amongst yourselves. I shall just observe, attend. Now that sounds terrible, doesn't it? But the fact of the matter is that I shall be learning from all of you. I shall be the learner, and only the learner, on the Friday. On the Saturday, in the afternoon, it will be questions and meditation, which I think it would be advisable to make it a silence practice. A silence practice. And do remember, bring your notebooks to all these. If I can help with the silence practice, I will, which means, of course, I shall have to say a word or two now and again. On the Sunday, if anybody has any Sunday morning now, you see there'll be those three talks, 24th, 25th, 26th, Sunday morning the 27th, if anybody has any personal questions, that is to say questions which he or she would like to discuss privately with me, please do so. Otherwise you're free to do what you like Sunday morning. In the afternoon, those who are coming only for the second half will be arriving, and there will be a sort of a general talk after tea. Don't take this as a fixed program. We'll play it by ear. Improvise as we go along, as and where necessary. Then on the 28th, 29th, 30th morning, that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, there'll be a talk. And in the afternoon, on the 28th, just as on Saturday the 26th, there'll be the silence practice questions and a silence practice meditation. On the 29th, questions and a discussion amongst yourselves, and I shall just learn at your feet. And on the 30th, in the afternoon, if anybody wishes to speak personally with me, discuss something privately, we'll devote it to that, and the other members can do what they wish to do. You can form small groups if you like and talk and discuss. After supper, I think I shall be ready to drop into bed each night and rest. But you are quite at liberty to form little groups, talk, discuss, in this room. Or maybe there is a little library room, first on your right as you go down the corridor, you see, towards the dining room. Or maybe there, you see. So you can do that. Those who don't wish to come to any meeting are perfectly at liberty not to come to the meeting. If the day is really wonderful and sunny and beautiful, pack all your troubles in your own kit bag and go singing like a lark along the lanes, if you wish. You are free. And on the morning of the 31st, the Thursday, we shall have a little review of the days which we have spent together. And then after lunch, we go our several ways from here. Is that clear? We all got the general idea. In the afternoons, the two silence meditation meetings will be on the 26th and 28th, that is Saturday and Monday. The questions and discussion meetings, when I shall be silent, will be the 25th and the 29th. You see, I've sort of done it like this. Balanced it that way. You can't balance everything because the day of departure will bring certain necessitate not having it too symmetrical. And then the personal questions and discussion. But those of you who wish to have ask personal questions like that and talk, write your question down and make quite certain you know exactly what you want to ask. I mean, we have all witnessed again and again in our lifetime at meetings, a person gets up and wants to ask a question. You hear a short discourse and neither the person nor all the listeners nor God in high heaven knows what on earth the question is. So that's just waffling along. So we'll avoid that. Now, is there anything you'd like to know or any suggestions which you'd like to make to improve this or better it? Yes. If it is, yes, if it is warm enough and nice enough, it will certainly be very nice to sit out and have our meeting there. This is a very peaceful situation. It's an ideal situation. It's even more peaceful than Hailey Huddersdon, because there the traffic is beginning to make itself felt now, isn't it? And of course, there at meal times, it's pandemonium. If the Buddha were present, he would ask Sariputta and Moggallana to catch hold of all the talkative monks and lead them out. Now, any other questions or suggestions? Remember, David, we'll have the meeting out, provided it's agreeable for everyone, you see.
What about your recorder? You can't take that.
Record it in your own being. What does it matter? A few words. So it only remains for me to say that I hope you will all be truly happy here, and that our togetherness will grow more and more intensely into a unified group. And let us bear in mind that unification does not mean uniformity. Uniformity is characterless. But unity, the truly unified state, is the state of perfect relationships between a large number, preferably a very large number, of distinct, unique particulars. This is unity, not being a yes man or a no man. If you belong to this party, you've always got to oppose the other party. Nothing of that sort. If you belong to that party, you've always got to support that party. This is where we say goodbye to intelligence. But to understand all, and to see in full the relationships between oneself and everything and everybody around, this means a group which is unified, which lives in a state of unity, which is true amity. So I hope something of that sort will become a living realization in these 8 days. And if it does, we have no idea what sort of beneficent influence can spread around because of our having met and lived together in the finest and the truest sense for these 8 days.